From Business Radio X Studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Learning Insights, featuring learning professionals, improving performance to drive business results.
Welcome back to an exciting and informative session of Learning Insights. This is your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is not Lee Cantor. We've got him downtown working on our behalf, but I have today my co-host, Mike Salmon. How you doing, man?
Pretty good, Stone. How are you?
I'm doing well. Looking forward to having you involved, and we ought to let the listeners know you are going to be captaining your own ship out in Gwinnett before too long.
You're giving them a warning already. Yeah, be ready for us, Gwinnett. But yeah, we'll be starting a studio within the next 30 days and looking forward to getting on the air and talking about businesses up in Gwinnett.
So it's Gwinnett Business Radio is going to be one of your first shows that you launch?
It will be the first in-house show, Gwinnett Business Radio. It'll be Tuesdays and Thursdays at 10 a.m. And if it goes as well as I think it will, maybe we'll add a few more.
Yeah.
And I'll have you come on my show. I do want to thank Lee for sitting in for me on this show for the last several weeks, by the way, keeping the seat warm.
Absolutely. Well, this is going to be a fun show. You know, this is brought to us by Training Pros. And our friends over there, Steve Capon, Leanne Langford, and that crowd. And they always do such a fabulous job of bringing us guests that are in the trenches and really doing the work of developing people in our workforce. We have with us this morning with the Global Hotel Learning Group of IHG, which is Intercontinental Hotel Group, Miss Jamie Cornelius. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
We are doing well. Delighted to have you. How about if you would give us a little background on IHG and maybe describe for us what your role is over there?
Sure. IHG is the Global Hotel or the Intercontinental Hotels Group, right? And we have 9 brands now worldwide, and we have over 4,500 hotels, and Holiday Inn, Crown Plaza, Hotel Indigo, Staybridge Suites, Candlewood Suites. I'm sure you're all very familiar with at least the Holiday Inn brand. And my role is in the Global Hotel Learning Design Group, and I am an instructional design manager, and I have a very small but mighty team, and we are instructional designers for worldwide sales, and we write training solutions for the sales group in all 4,500 hotels worldwide, including on-property salespeople and off-property salespeople.
Man, that's an awful lot of brands. So what is the thinking behind having so many brands?
Well, if I was running the company, I don't know if I could answer that question. So they just like to be a very brand focused and have lots of choices for their customers and their travelers. And we've added 2 recent brands as well to the mix, even hotels and Walux, which is a Chinese brand as well. So definitely expanding the brands to give travelers lots of choices.
Well, one of the reasons I ask is I got to believe that that could have some impact on either the content of the training or maybe the way that it's delivered. Do you find that serving these different brands has some impact on the decisions you make in your instructional design process?
So for a lot of different functions, that is the case. For my function, we are a global team, so we focus solely on sales, and brand isn't a factor in our training. So, but we do have to take into account that the customers that are coming into the hotels looking to book a meeting or book a wedding or book a family event is going to be very focused on the brand, and whether that brand fits them or not is going to be part of their decision-making process. So we always have to keep the brand in mind and be very, very brand focused when we are designing training solutions or the voice that we use in our training solutions.
Now, Jamie, I'm not as polished as Stone here as far as the business, but what is it that you are, in layman's terms, I guess, look to do with the people that you're training?
So salespeople, and I'm new to the hotel industry as well. I came from telecommunications for 12 years at AT&T. So I'm learning the hotel industry as well. And salespeople are selling, they're selling events. They're selling their dates, rates, and space, if you will, about you want to come in and book a meeting or a seminar or hold a event, a wedding, that kind of thing. That's the client that we're focusing on for my function. Now, we have designers in different functions of the business as well. So brand and operations and things of that nature. So for my function, it is sales in the hotel, and then for global sales as well. So big accounts like Dell and Walmart, things like that.
So do execs, line managers come to you and say, I'm trying to fill this training gap or solve this problem, and then you go back to your shop and build it? Or do you design some potential solutions and come to them? How does the front end of this thing work?
So ideally, what you said, the latter part would be the way to go, right? So I would be, I would, you know, dream up this solution, and I would go to my clients and say, this is great, this is what we should do. In real world, they come to us and say, we have a need, we're rolling out a new initiative, we're rolling out a new product or service, and we need training to fill that gap to help us support that. So that's kind of where we are now. I think as we go forward over the next couple of years, we can begin to be more forward thinking and strategic in what we're doing.
And they need it yesterday.
Absolutely.
They don't say, hey, when you get a chance, Jamie, put a little thought into this and let me know what's happening.
Absolutely. They need it yesterday, and they have 12 other projects ahead of that. So, yeah, it's definitely fast-paced. And having an in-house instructional design team is something new to our sales group as well at IHG. They've typically outsourced a lot of their training needs. So we've been in place for about 2 years. So we've become very integral in their training solutions, obviously, but we want to become more strategic in getting ahead of some of those initiatives.
Would the training be over days, weeks? Could it be even months? Or is it, I assume, by a case-by-case basis?
It's a case-by-case basis, depending on what the need is. So we implement e-learning solutions that are 10 minutes long, 20 minutes long, or we have sales training that we're implementing now around the world that's anywhere from 4 days long to 2 days long to 3 days long, depending on what the need is, to a GM program that's a course of months long.
So I'm curious how you know if it's working. I can almost get my arms around, you know, if the sales training is working because they sell.
Right.
But I mean, how do you know what the real impact is? And how do you go about measuring any of this stuff? Or do you?
Well, sure. And so the measurement strategy for any company, right, for when you're implementing training is pretty simple. There's lots of different theories out there. Kirkpatrick's four levels of evaluation, Gagne, Phillips, all kinds of different theories. We tend to stick to the Kirkpatrick's four levels of evaluation. So it's level one is very basic. You're surveying, did they like the training? Did they feel good while they're getting the training? Do they think that would be useful for them? Okay, so then a level two is a knowledge-based assessment. Did they learn anything or testing? Did it sort of stick in their brain? And level three is behavioral or sort of job application, right? Are they using the skills that they learned in their workplace? And level four is that business impact. Are you getting any ROI from you know, sending Stone to training, right? So that's how you basically measure training, and you do it in a variety of different ways. And we're new to measurement at IHG. We're really dipping our toes in the recent months, so it's something very new to us. We've typically just measured, did they like it? Would they recommend it to somebody? And did you come and fill a seat? So what we've doing now is really focusing on what you just said. Is it working? I mean, yes, they can sell, but are they selling using the skills that we taught them? Are they selling because that's what they do normally? So that's what we're trying to measure with our measurement impact strategy.
That's got to be very difficult because you're not the measuring, but the people you're actually training, because that's really on the employer, the person you're working for, to have the right people in the room. Because you might have someone like myself, and I don't need training, I know everything. And then you have people that understand, this is, you know, very important to me, and I do need this kind of training. So you must run the gamut as far as the type of people you have to train.
Absolutely. So depending on what the training solution might be, from an e-learning to an instructor-led training to something that's self-paced and virtual. So it depends on the person sitting in the seat, obviously, and what they're going to take away from that training. We have a set of learning objectives that we base training on, and we expect that they would come out of that training knowing these learning objectives. And that's what we hang measurement on, are those learning objectives. And so that's, you know, if you can measure these objectives, then you can at least assume that they've taken this amount of stuff away from the training. Whether you liked it or not, or had a bad attitude about it or not, that's up to you, right? But as an instructional designer, the only thing that I can really hang my hat on are those learning objectives that we write at the very beginning.
I noticed you mentioned your learning strategy earlier, and in my notes here it says you have an informal learning strategy. I like informal. I'm not a formal guy. What does that mean, though, informal?
So training is taking on a very different role, I think, in your workplace, in your home place. If you feel like you need to learn something about how to work your, well, not iPhone, you have a flip phone, but how to work an iPhone.
Thanks for letting everybody know that I'm behind the times.
Then you would simply go to the web and learn that. You would, you know, type in a search and you could find out those skills. So there's a lot of informal learning that takes place in the job, in the workplace as well. 70% now is informal learning, where 20% is on the job.
Wow.
And 10% is formal classroom training. So we only have 10% as instructional designers that we can truly, truly measure. So we have to look at that other 70% and say, how do we really see if that's impacting their learning or their skill set, and how do we connect it to our formal classroom training? So our business partners are doing some things with their own web portals and initiatives that they've got going on. So they're implementing with a new sales culture we've got at IHG, they're implementing this web portal to help the salespeople have different tools and resources where they can do some informal learning on their own that connect to what we're doing in the classroom. So they're measuring things like, are they going to the website? How many unique visitors are going to the website? They have self-assessments that are on the website as well. So they can, as a director of sales, self-assess where I have deficiencies, and they can use the tools that connect to those deficiencies.
Let me follow up with a question, though. Is that the way it's going in your business now, or is that unique to your business, to what you're doing, or that informal learning strategy? Is that kind of the way of the future?
I think it's both. I think the way that we're doing our web portal and the self-assessments is unique to us at IHG. I'm sure other companies are out there doing some of the similar things. But informal learning is definitely a trend that's developing in the training world. And how do you, as an instructional designer, come away from that theoretical instructional design, mantra? And how do you really talk about, what do you mean I can't write a learning objective about how to Google something? I don't understand. So it's really difficult as a learning professional to think about, okay, they're getting all this learning from other sources. How do we bring that into the instructional design world, and how do we help measure that as well? So it's definitely something that's out there and changing and evolving, and we're trying to evolve with it.
So as you fine-tune this system and you get better and better at collecting all this data, now what do you do with it? Because I could see you getting overwhelmed pretty quickly.
Right. Well, I don't, because I have a I don't know. I don't understand the data myself. So I recently hired someone on my team that is directly responsible for measurement and impact only.
Oh, wow.
And so he is really focused on taking all this data and figuring out what do we do with it, and all these numbers and spreadsheets and names and IDs and things like that. So what we're doing with the data is a couple of different things. Right now we're sort of in our measurement phase. We haven't really gotten to the impact phase yet. So measurement is different than impact in my thinking. And we're really measuring not only just the butts in the seats and did they like it, but are they retaining the knowledge? So we're using knowledge assessments that we've not done in the past. And we're using surveys that are follow-up surveys to capture some of those verbatims about, are they using the skills? Are they making an impact? Are they applying it to their job? So we're getting some of that data. Then we're cross-referencing it with some of this self-assessment stuff, the informal stuff that we're doing on the other side of the portal, and cross-referencing that to see if Stone's self-assessing that he has a deficiency in this particular area, is he attending this training? And if he is, what's the score for his assessment? And then following up, did he actually apply some of those skills as well? So that's some of the stuff that we're playing with the data, and it's very new for us. So we kind of don't know what we've got yet. And we're having a lot of fun at least slicing and dicing it and going to the stakeholders and saying, this is some of the stuff that's coming out, and we would like to explore more.
Jamie, where do you find your customers? How do you get leads?
For training?
For training. I mean, dating ourselves. I mean, we know that you don't go into the yellow pages and say, okay, I need some training. I mean, is it just networking and getting out there and finding out what people need?
So it's really our client stakeholders. So our sales group, Worldwide Sales, drives our training solutions. And they roll out initiatives, they roll out new product, they roll out whatever it is, and they come to us and say, this is our training need, because we're strictly in-house for them. So
okay.
And are you finding that the execs, business partners, I think, was the label that you used, are they really embracing this new trend toward measuring and impact and that kind of thing, or are you finding a little bit of resistance?
So that's a great question. Because
that was a fantastic question, I thought.
You get the question of the day, Stone.
All right.
Well, there's still time left on the show, right? I can beat that, right?
Absolutely. So I think that, in theory, a lot of people want to know the measurement, right? They say, oh, we need to know what's going on. We want to know, are they passing the assessments? We want to know, can we connect it with any business trends? Can we see any ROI? But then they also see, well, maybe what we're doing isn't working, and that kind of scares them too. So I think that they're, I think it's six in one hand, half dozen in the other at some point where they want to see the data, and we want to give them the data. But I think that at some point the data will speak for itself, and we may need to make changes. Whether that's good or bad, it is what it is. And I think that we've been easing our stakeholders into it, and they've seemed to like it so far. So, and what the great thing is that the data reveals stuff to us that we can make improvements on our training as well. And that's the biggest point is we're really focused. I'm very passionate about the person that is impacted by the training that we write, whether it be someone coming into the AT&T store to buy a new phone or someone coming into a hotel.
She's not going to let that go, is she?
I'm going to get an iPhone real soon, I promise you.
Or someone that comes in the hotel wants to book a wedding or a meeting or whatever. That's the actual person that the training that we write impacts. And that's where I'm passionate about it. So if we can make improvements on that and improve that experience, the data can say whatever it needs to say. I'm happy to make improvements.
You explained the challenge, of course, of showing a return on investment, the ROI and so forth. Are there other unique challenges that you face in your business?
With training, definitely. IHG is very heavily franchised. So it's 4,500 hotels worldwide, but almost, you know, more than 3,000 of those hotels are franchised hotels. So it's quite difficult sometimes for us to require training in certain hotel or brands because they're not directly linked to IHG is sort of, you know, you have to require training. So we have a challenge in getting people to pay for training as well. So they pay for our training. Mm-hmm. And so we have to market our training and sell our training as well. So not only do we write it, we have to market it and drive people into it. And that becomes challenging. And so from there, it also becomes challenging to measure that because it's hard to tie through those franchise lines to get that ROI because they may or may not want to report back to us or whatever it is. It just, when you start to have those franchise situations, it becomes more difficult, obviously, to get people to want to take your training and pay for training. And then you have the fact that we are worldwide. So it's not just in Americas, it's all over the world. And we have challenges with you're writing across those global lines and making sure that what we write is globally accepted, making sure that the measurement that we're trying to retrieve is globally out there. And so those are some of the challenges that we face.
You may not have enough data points to be able to answer this yet, but I'd be curious maybe just intuitively if you're starting to see some trends and some patterns emerge. Are you finding that some types of content or medium for delivering the training lend themselves to different cultures or different job roles more effectively than others? Are you finding that you can start to match up? E-learning is great for this, you know, but don't even try that over here or with this culture kind of thing?
Well, the way that we deliver some of our training solutions, we do have a lot of different solutions in the way that we deliver them. So we do e-learning, obviously, and that's globally accepted for e-learning. We do have challenges with bandwidth and things of that nature around the world, so we have to be very cognizant of video types and file sizes and things of that nature because we have bandwidth issues. Instructor-led training is pretty much globally accepted. The one area that we have some challenges with are our virtual and center-led or over-the-web classes that we do. So they're instructor-led virtually. And sometimes it doesn't translate as well if you're not a native English speaker or if the instructor is not speaking the native language or that the bandwidth is an issue, things of that nature. So there have been certain countries that have chosen one delivery medium over another of the same class because of those challenges.
So I want to back up a little bit. How did you find yourself in this line of work? Because you obviously thoroughly enjoy it. You have a great deal of passion around it. How did you get into this line of work?
So I started out with BellSouth Mobility, actually, many, many moons ago.
Who'd have thought, right?
Selling cell phones. And we talked about the bag phone. I sell those and program those. And I continued my career with through Singular and AT&T as a retail sales associate and a manager and became a trainer for Singular Wireless and did training for 3 or 4 years. And I just loved it. I decided, I'll try something new. And then got into instructional design about, 9 or 10 years ago and just love it. I'm sort of a writer at heart. And I felt like, well, I could do a better job than the other person was doing. So
confident, too. Not only passionate, but she's confident.
Yeah, so that's where I'm in now. So I've been with IHG for a couple of years, and I was with AT&T for almost 12, and I love what I do.
What is the biggest enjoyment you get out of what you do? You do a lot of things, but what do you enjoy the most of all of it?
I think the most is when I get some feedback from one of those surveys that says, this was a great class, I really enjoyed this, and I'm going to take this and I'm going to apply this in my daily line of work. Or there was a newspaper article in Dubai about this solution selling that we're doing and one of the classes that we're doing it, and that it was an invite only and it was a very special event. And so that was very, that was a great thing. So I like to get that sort of impact on my own.
Do you get to do a lot of traveling globally?
Not this year. Last year I did, but not this year. So
it's like Dubai. It's like you didn't do that when you were working for the cell phone company.
No, I didn't actually go to Dubai. There was a newspaper article, but no. Last year there was some good travel. So good insight to our different countries and regions, especially how they learn and how they implement training in different regions, which is completely different than what we do in the Americas. So it's very enlightening, and I have to really think through those challenges when we're thinking about a training solution.
As an instructional designer, you have to be really good at putting yourself in the mindset of the learner, mm-hmm. I would suspect, and putting yourself in their shoes. So looking through that lens, what advice, if any, do you have for the learner? And I'll keep it broad for right now, but you might even get more specific within your group, to take full advantage of all of these resources that are being made available to them.
One of the things that I would always recommend to someone who is in a job where they have to obviously do training and there's lots of resources, to not get overwhelmed, but also not to get in their own little silo. So because if you sort of go, you know, come under a rock and say, I can do this job all of my own, I don't need any help, I don't need any outside resources, then you miss out on all the great things that are out there, especially with the things that IHG is rolling out. And you have to really be open and be aware to things that are out there. And you have to read the emails, you have to read the net, you have to read the blogs, and to just be open to the different resources and take notes. That's one of the biggest things. Take notes. And whatever way that you do, take notes and utilize those notes and set yourself sort of an action plan of things that you want to go and explore. And how would you then take those things that you're finding and apply them in your job?
So a related question, kind of a follow-up, but a little different, a bit of a pivot. What counsel, if any, if you had an opportunity, would you offer the line manager, the exec, the business partner in your world to really capitalize on and effectively use the strategic resource that a competent instructional design department can afford them?
Bring us to the table early. That's the biggest piece of advice. So many times people, our stakeholders will, and not just in my line of business, but in any line of business, they come to the training department and say, oh my God, we have this thing. We got to roll this out. We need it yesterday. And so it really helps when you bring someone from the instructional design team to the table when you're discussing an initiative and timeline so that they can be involved in the discussion and understand what the initiatives are, what the timelines are, what the challenges are, so that we can provide a better training solution and not something that is rushed and, you know, rapid and we're missing parts of the strategy that they're implementing.
Have you ever found yourself, Jamie, in a situation where you get frustrated because maybe the company is not spending enough time on the training, and you know they need a little bit more, but for whatever reason, maybe budget reasons, they say, okay, that's it for the training, we're done, and you feel like you haven't quite completed the job?
Yes.
That's got to be real frustrating because you know there's so much more potential.
It is, and as an instructional designer, you know, you do your best, and there's blood, sweat, and tears you pour into these materials, and you work day and night, and you sequester yourself away from everyone else, and you want so much for that training to make a big impact. And when the business decides, whether it's budget reasons or timing or whatever it is, that they say, yeah, we're not going to do this anymore, or it sort of is a blow to the heart because I am passionate about it. So those are things, you just kind of roll with those, and you take that to the next project, and you say, well, okay, well, this is what I can do better. And you start to ask different questions in the beginning so that you understand if there are risks for that, and you can plan ahead for those risks to get the most sort of bang for your buck, if you will, at the very beginning.
So what's next for you? Where are you going to put your energy for the next, 6-8 months?
Well, it's definitely sales training. So we recently relaunched the level one sales training globally at IHG, and we are on to level two and to level three globally. So that's what we're looking at for the next year at least, and some good product training also for a new product that we're rolling out. So very excited.
I'm excited for you. Yep. What a delight having you come in the studio
Thank
and visit
you.
With us. We got to have you back sometime.
Well, I'm going to make a test so I can measure your learning.
Terrific. So we'll get some data on the impact and effectiveness
Absolutely.
Of this conversation?
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton for my co-host Mike Salmon, our producer Kevin Finn, and our guest this morning, Jamie Cornelius with IEHG, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next week on Learning Insights.